AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. The House votes are in.
The yeas are 216. The nays are 210.
And Kevin McCarthy is out as Speaker. CBS's Skyler Henry has the latest from Capitol Hill.
Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz filed the motion to remove McCarthy after the Speaker turned to Democrats to help pass a short-term spending bill to keep the government open.
The one thing that the White House, House Democrats, and many of us on the conservative side of the Republican caucus would argue is that the thing we have in common, Kevin McCarthy said something to all of us at one point or another that he didn't really mean and never intended to live up to.
The decision to vacate the chair means the House will now plunge into a battle to elect the next Speaker of the House, though McCarthy likely can and will run again.
California Democrat LaFonza Butler has been sworn into the Senate.
And that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which you are about to enter, so help you God.
I will.
Congratulations.
Butler's only the third black woman after Kamala Harris and first openly gay senator. She replaces Dianne Feinstein, who died last week at 90. The vice president will speak at her funeral in California on Thursday. Former President Trump got hit with a temporary gag order today in his civil fraud trial in New York. CBS's Robert Costa's there.
On Truth Social, Trump's social media platform earlier today, Trump issued a statement about a clerk who works for the judge. And he said that this clerk falsely is the girlfriend of Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York. And because of that statement, and he came back into the courtroom and said, effectively, you now have a gag order when it comes to talking about my staff.
Trump also took a hit from Forbes today. He's no longer rich enough to be on its list of its 400 wealthiest Americans. The Justice Department issued sweeping indictments and sanctions today against China and Canada for selling chemicals to make fentanyl to drug dealers and cartels. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
We know that behind the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans is a cartel-driven fentanyl trafficking network that spans countries and continents.
More than 20 people are dead after a bus carrying tourists crashed off an overpass in Venice, Italy. That bus fell 49 feet onto power lines and caught fire. It's still unclear what caused it. FEMA's sending an emergency alert. Here's CBS's Matt Piper.
The test will evaluate the technological capabilities of the National Alert System to reach and inform as many people as possible in case of a widespread emergency.
It goes out tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
This season, your coffee orders are getting warmer and your outfits are getting cozier. The world keeps changing, and so does COVID-19. That's why this season's COVID-19 shots have been updated. They're one of the best ways to help protect yourself against COVID-19. You can get a COVID-19 shot at the same visit as a flu shot if you're due for both, as recommended by the CDC. Talk to your healthcare provider to learn more and schedule at vaccines.gov. And don't forget to get extra cinnamon spice. Sponsored by Pfizer and BioNTech.
Dive into crime dramas on Pluto TV. Unravel the mysteries on CSI, Criminal Minds, and Blue Bloods. Plus, watch thousands of other crime movies and TV shows, all for free. Download Pluto TV on all your favorite devices and start streaming now.
Exergen thermometers are a top choice of medical professionals at highly ranked hospitals across the U.S. Accuracy matters, so make Exergen the chosen thermometer for your home and family. Available at Walmart and other participating retailers. Learn more at Exergen.com.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crudités at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were crudy takes.
Crudies takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to get high-speed internet now. 877-227-0924.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And my electrical was deemed unsafe. And I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is the safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes. And Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families. And it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed. And we feel it and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Lows dip down to about 65. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 75. A blend of clouds and sun. Clear skies tomorrow night. Lows around 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 78.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Pull, you know, the cord between the coffee cans tight enough.
Oh, man. You know, something over here. I always have a backup plan in place, and the soundboard seems to be having some trouble. So we just really quickly rewired things, and we're at it. You know, I'm always ready to go, Tim.
Ready to go. We had a nice break last week. A couple, you know, things going on, but this week, oh, I was waiting for this. In fact,
This is,
you
awesome.
Know, our friend, you know, from Educators Amplified, Joanna Rosato, just does some work on the side with, you know, another really important person, and they put out a piece in Education Week. She sent it to me and went, "What do you think?" And I went, "Oh my God, I'm not allowed to say some of the things that I actually typed back to her because I was like, it was powerful stuff." In fact, Teacher Power Education Week, Dr. Michael Fullen, Joanna Rosato, welcome to Busted Pencils. Before we get talking though, I got to read the beginning quote directly so that people can get the setup here. And here we go. Quote, "The current system," keep that word in mind, people, "system. The current system of education does not work for the majority of students. The situation is worsening, battered by the pandemic that exposed the inner weaknesses of a structure and a culture that does not support well-being and learning in the world in which we live. Many teachers are leaving the profession or not showing up in the first place. Those teachers that remain are retreating to the one thing they can partially control, surviving as best they can behind the classroom door." Welcome to Busted Pencils again, Dr. Michael Fullen, Joanna Rosato, Educators Amplified. Dr. Fullen, where did you find this Joanna Rosato? Because she snuck around and grabbed me because she is like our favorite person.
She's become my favorite person, too. I live in Toronto. And I work all over the world, but quite a lot in California, for example. And out of the blue, I guess 2.5 years ago, she sent me a note saying, "I just read your work on what we call the drivers, what's going to change the system." And she said, "It resonates with me." And so I always link to people who are in doing the work because they have the most insights. And Joanna does the work in a way that doesn't accept the system as it is. Isn't like a storming rebel, although I'm sure you are sometimes, but really built her own system as she did within her sub-school. And then we started to work together and had common ground. So my work is very well grounded in California, for example, and other places we work. So I always look for practitioners who know more than I do.
Well, and there she is, Joanna. Yep. How are you? How about that for compliments from Dr. Michael Follin?
So nice. So nice. Yeah. Hi. Great to be back on the show.
Well, so, okay. So let's get into it, right? I mean, just for people, please check out, we'll put some more links up there and do some promotions of Dr. Follin's websites, Deep Learning, Leadership. But system seems to really be at the heart, Dr. Follin, of the work you're talking about, system change, systemics. Can you just give a brief kind of like an overview of saying, when you say the system is something we need to change, what does that mean to you? Somebody who's listening, my neighbor who's saying, I think system change is what's needed. I just don't know how to do it. Give us a little 101 on systems.
That's hard to do in a few minutes, but the short version is the work that we do is heavily grounded from the classroom upward to the policy, not the other way around. Mm. So I'd say, you know, build the bottom, strengthen the middle, which is the district, and intrigue the top. So we know that for the vast majority of students, really something like 80%, they're either alienated or bored. And this was the case before COVID. And so it's even worse now because of the additional psychological pressures and things that people can't really handle anyways. And we find that teachers, there's about four or five things that if they happen together, it's when they happen together that the system changes. There's hardly any system change, although I would say that our work in Anaheim Unified or Anaheim Union High School District with about 20 schools, it's highly successful. We write about it. It's got the system quality because the pieces are connected to each other, the student to the teachers, teacher to the principal, principal to the district. That rarely happens, as Joanna knows quite well from her local work.
Yeah, Joanna, comment there.
Well, I was just thinking again how you bring up the word system. And that, again, was something that Michael and I came together over because his deep understanding of systems, I would always say, I'm like, Michael, we could have all the best ideas in the world, but in this current system, they don't live, they don't thrive, they're temporary. And so that was something that we really came together on and want to help people see that it's not necessarily going to be one individual classroom at a time, which is how that policy down to the classroom system works.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so that, you know, yeah, so there it is, the system there. And you point this out for the show, though, going back to the piece in Education Week, teacher powers. What I really love about this piece here is the centering of teachers and putting forward this idea that really does. And I say at this moment, Joanna knows this, I have been, teachers are demoralized. They're leaving the classroom. And people say they're quitting. No, they're walking away from a job they're not allowed to do anymore. The agency to be that person who lifts the spirit, to does something for deeply for the community, the system doesn't allow them to do that, and they walk away. You two, though, in here say, but they could be kind of centered. Is centering the right word here, Michael?
Well, first, we did an op-ed about a year ago that was called Who's Abandoning Whom?
Mm-hmm.
Is the system abandoning teachers or is it the other way around? Well, we answered our own question because we also said, well, let's look at the teachers who are staying. What makes them stay? And always what makes them stay is working with other teachers and being close to their students. I think to a certain extent, teachers are not taking the risk to work with other teachers because it hasn't been encouraged. So that's a problem of initiative. But what we have found and know that, again, I go to Anaheim because it's very clear, they have developed a system where the students are developing what they call ability to be good in society and good for society. So they're actually working with the help of principals. They're making changes. They're having success. And teachers don't realize they could have more success. Certainly the hierarchy doesn't.
Joanna, follow
up. Well, and you know, for me, it always starts with just like a thought where, and that is, you know, Michael and I talk regularly and I was just kind of saying the whole, like, let's put our money where our mouth is. Everybody says teachers are so important, but we don't have a system that actually has ever centered them. And then, you know, that I am a passionate advocate for teachers. And I believe that teachers have the gold that is needed to really move things along, and that they're an asset and a resource. We still do, even though we have a shortage and an exodus, there are still mainly highly qualified credentialed teachers in our schools, and we should be using that resource as part of this system change.
So we're at the system change, and I again go back to the piece because I underlined this, and quote, "The old system and its drivers for change have failed time and time again. The external levers, such as high stakes testing intended to change the system, have not worked." I mean, that's, Joanna, right? How long have you and I talked about going, it's like, the high stakes, and some people think this is an oversimplification, but it's like the high stakes mandated, you will learn all of this stuff because I said so, doesn't work. Michael, I see you nodding there on that. It seemed like that one seems very, very simple. I remember this was, 2010, 2011, Joanna, when I entered the opt-out movement, because I was watching my son, who was then in fifth grade, just literally, going, the teachers were saying, Tim, we can't really teach him and engage him in learning because that's not on the test. And I went, does anybody recognize how sick of a system it is when you're literally telling parents and kids, we can't teach him to learn because that's not on the test? Michael.
Well, there's two things. One is you can't mandate what matters. What really matters is the motivation of students plunging into the deeper goals of problem solving, thinking, working with others, making a difference. And they're not turned on by doing well on a given test, studying hard and do, because it's irrelevant to the immediacy of what they need. So, and people haven't been able to come up with an alternative. That's the problem. They have the test. They keep going back to the test. It doesn't work. The different goals that we call it the six C's. It's more like citizenship, collaboration, communication, creativity. It's not doing just well on a test. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that, but they don't have the alternative. That's the problem.
Johnny, right. Jump in there.
Well, I agree with that. And I think it's important to clarify and bring it back to the piece that the alternative isn't put into place by those in power. And what I mean by that is maybe like districts or state systems. There are teachers and groups of students who have found success and alternative and have evidence of that. And this is one of the exciting things of these, these stories that we're sharing, and also the energy that's coming off both the piece that both of you share, is that I get excited about not just putting this on teachers, but really centering the collaborative work, the messy work between teachers and their students. Because one of the biggest learning moments coming out of the COVID era and the largest social uprising of all of our lifetimes is the young people saying school's not really working the way it's been working, and this is an opportunity for us to do something radically different. And we saw that in the largest social uprising of our lifetime. And so now here we're back in these situations where, things aren't working. The standardized tests, we've known they've not been working. But then we have these really exciting collaborative efforts from teachers and students in their classrooms, communities, alternative settings. And it's, by and large, it has to be different. So those that are left have to do things differently or fail. And they're doing them differently.
They're doing them a lot differently. In fact, what you're hinting at, and again, our guest tonight, Dr. Michael Full and Joanna Rosato, their piece about teacher power in Education Week, culture. What about this culture? We talked about systems. We're going to talk about culture. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after the break.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Windshield from that semi? Don't worry. Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. The
then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Lows dip down to about 65 tonight under overcast skies. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 77. Cloudy skies expected. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Chance for scattered thunderstorms. Lows level off around 55. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 73.
That's the way we love it every Tuesday night. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Oh, Rise Against, we love your intro music because it always sets us up. Educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Michael Full and Joanna Rosato, their piece in Education Week talking about teacher power. We talked about systems. We're going to go into culture, but we have a caller and we want to get to that caller always for the first time. LA Tom, you are out there. Tom, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. What I'd like to say is that why are we not following the lead of someone like Iceland, who was actually in the same position that we were at, where they were the lowest in terms of education in the world? And now they're like number one. I was watching Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's documentary.
Yeah, Tom, I think you're talking about Finland, though, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Finland. Yes.
I just want to make sure. I knew you were talking about Finland.
Finland. Yeah. Why are we not taking something that's working in other places? I'm sure it has something to do with money in politics or money in, all of that in schools and in terms of paid, which is maybe the administrators and not the teachers. I don't know. All I know is it's been done in a place like Finland where they were the worst and now they're the best. And they got rid of the standardized testing. They got rid of those different things. Which made it so their actual culture and systems seem like they're really working.
Tom, and thank you for that, because actually too, as much as Finland, Michael, actually too, you were saying there are places in California, in Canada, that are talking about, not just talking about, implementing system change to affect culture. I don't know if you wanted to just respond to Tom and then we'll dig into that culture.
Yeah, let's do that. Finland, we know Finland because we work in a lot of different countries. And the irony is, and Linda Darling-Hammond, who's head of the school board and great leader in change in California at the policy level, she said, you can't fire your way to Finland. The way she put it, like you can't just fire your teachers. But it's actually worse than that, because Finland is a small country, and they themselves will say they're not as good as people think we are. So I think we can learn from others, but the culture is how teachers work together. And I have to say that we've had pockets of that over the last 20 years, but it's never stuck, and it's more unstuck now because teachers don't feel it's possible or worth working with others. So you're really stuck. culture is about trusted relationships between and among people. And you don't have that now. So you can't even get to first base.
Okay, so then so to affect system change, we have to change the culture. Is it that's and then okay. And so Joanna, you exist in that culture all the time. And we've talked about it on Educators Amplified on Busted Pencils, though. Okay, so tell me about what you're going to do to fix the culture.
Well, we propose teachers working in an absolutely different way that will kind of come about by flattening the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Right now, I see the hierarchy, you know, is something that really hamstrings us. Instead of us all being looked at as, you know, I'm not saying nobody should, you know, the position shouldn't exist, but that it should be flattened. You know, mm-hmm. I always say it's a wheel that should be rolling through instead of like a pyramid that something like maybe trickles down to the bottom. And so thinking about how teachers' work is scheduled, how their expertise is actually really gathered and used. Michael, you looked like you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, a little bit, because the interesting thing is, and I published a book a few months ago called The Principle 2.0, mm-hmm. and it's based on the finding, using certain principles who happen to be exceptions, that the principal's job is to develop the local system, the relationships, the flattened hierarchy at work. And we have examples of that. The problem is the hierarchy doesn't let their principals or cultivate their principals to work that way to change the culture. There are exceptions, and that's what we're pushing for. But the system doesn't suppresses the capacity and doesn't develop it that would be required to do this, because they believe that test scores are more concrete, which is a false assumption. So it's really just all haywire. And it's getting worse because people are running out of hope and they're running out of energy.
Well, and that's the piece too, to kind of bring this back, is to recognize, and again, before COVID, you know, I 2010, my son Luke was in fifth grade, right? Before that, you know, it's 1983, we talked about this, Michael, a nation at risk. It kind of put this in place. In 1983, I was the cause of the nation at risk. I accept that. I'm sorry that my test scores in 1983 were so bad. You know, I've taken ownership for that. And I've been trying, but that idea, though, as you said, is the simplicity of saying test scores go up, therefore learning occurred, therefore teachers are good, therefore principals are good. Is it that system's just so neat and so nice, we just can't let it go?
It's not that, because the test scores aren't going up. They haven't gone up since 1980. It's a false interpretation to say that because we have testing, it goes up. President Bush signed that No Child Left Behind in 2002, mm-hmm. which was heavily test-based.
Right.
And since then, the decline has been incessant, because tests are not the motivation to learn. Mm-hmm. What's motivation to learn is solving problems, making a difference in society, working with other people to do that. There's so many more things. We call it the shared humanity solution. Mm-hmm. And people are just not working on that. And so they're stuck in a regime that doesn't work. Almost everyone knows it doesn't work now. They're just having a hard time coming up with the alternative that we recommend.
Well, and the alternative, because we are going to get to that. Our guests, Dr. Michael Full and Joanna Rosato, their piece on Teacher Power and Education Week. The number is 844-967-2789. Solutions, system, culture, it's all here. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, back after the break.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I joined the Navy to serve my country as a Navy SEAL. While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. And I broke my neck. It left me paralyzed. Paralyzed Veterans of America was by my side from that moment on.
Since 1946, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to our wounded veterans. we will never leave a fallen comrade behind.
Thanks to PVA, paralyzed veterans are getting specialized medical care and treatments. The benefits they've earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
To learn more, go to PVA.org today.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay, smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything, helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours, at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people, a neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When was the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Lows dip down to about 65. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 75. A blend of clouds and sun. Clear skies tomorrow night. Lows around 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 78. Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Lows dip down to about 65. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 75. A blend of clouds and sun. Clear skies tomorrow night. Lows around 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 78.
I can kind of like hear the sounds in the hallway now from my office, and I'm like, they just sound unhappy. Like, you can hear sound, you know what I mean? And you know what, like a happy sound, you know what I mean? That buzz.
It's a different buzz.
It's a different buzz, and it's unhappiness.
Okay, and but, so
I mean, I can't blame them much. I mean, I can't blame them much. They've spoken out time and time again in just the short, like we always move through iterations of students, and so we keep them moving. But just in the short span that the young people who are in the building that the buildings we're going into have been in there, they've seen an increase of their own safety at risk, increase of their teachers not being listened to or cared for, you know, an increase of the curriculum being increasingly more scripted and more harmful to the different identities and ideas and directions they want the world to be going. So in just that short span that they've been in, if we're thinking about a high school or a middle school or elementary school, the time that the young people are in that building, they've experienced a whole lot in a little bit of time to where they go into a place where they, I think it's behavior is a form of communication, right? Joanna, like we are always reading children's energy and behaviors in schools, and we're seeing that they're not happy. They're saying this is not okay. And by and large, they're damn right.
Yeah. So we have no choice but to
do something.
To do something. And that's where you guys put this forward. And you say there's an existential issue here, but there's hope, because changing the system to go after this, as you say, global challenge, this just that pivot into going, what if we centered our work on this issue of the well-being of society? And it sounds too simple, but is it, or what, did you mean it to be that simple, Michael?
Yes, in a direct way. Let's add another layer to this.
That
students who do well, they're because their families are pushing and all of that. One of the studies I read called them the wounded winners. They're not all that happy. They do well in the test scores.
Yep.
And they get jobs, but they're not happy in life. So, and the solution is it's obvious to say this, it's harder to do, but if you want to solve a social problem, you have to involve the people who have the problem in the solution. Mm. We have to involve the students who have the problem of boredom and burnout and ill-being in the solution. And Joanna has done that in a microcosm of her work. And we have to do that as a norm.
So in that sense then too, so let's go back to you, the way of, so how do we get there? Is it, you know, is it the, you said not hierarchical, but I heard you though talking about, like, you know, if we talk about the structure of schools and how they're organized with teachers in individual classrooms, there's a kind of an isolation set up in this idea. If we want them to come out, work collaboratively into those different settings, what about, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there. What about the building, what we say is the building principal? Are they part of the hierarchy, or are they part of the cultural change?
It depends where you go. They're sometimes one or the other. And if they're part of the hierarchy, they've got the bad role of imposing something that doesn't work. But if they're in Anaheim, where the 20 school principals are working on behalf of the community, they're fantastically effective, and they've reversed the kind of energy in that system from the hierarchy to the decentralization, and then pulled out the decentralization to learn from it. So it's reverse thinking, and people will slip into hierarchy because it looks like it. Okay, we do this, and we're addressing it. Nobody is getting anywhere by increasing the hierarchy. Nobody in education.
Well, and that's the part too, where you sit there and it's like, because pushing this and putting forward, you know, you'd say your six C's, you know, how do we instill compassion, character, citizenship, collaboration, communication, creativity, critical thinking. Well, yeah, it's like you can't impose that, because those are values that we practice, is the way I look at those. And so if we're going back to this piece, teachers and students, teachers and learners, teachers and kids, teachers and communities, centering those values then it starts to emerge as this. And then I just want to throw the other part in there where you say students are grounded in the new triple E of the new triple E reality of equity, engagement, excellence. That's awesome. There's hope there. And Joanna, I see you smiling right there because we say, like, she's always like, Tim, stop beating the problem up. Give me some hope.
Well, again, it's just a different philosophical foundation, but the philosophical foundation that is natural and intuitive to the students who arrive and the teachers who choose to be there. And so it's just building up a strength. It's mining the gold that already exists.
Okay, so one, just got to see, we got a question from somebody who's texting out there, though.
I love it.
And I'm going to frame this, though, and maybe not exactly how they're saying this, but doesn't this cost money and resources to do the type of change we're doing that you guys are proposing? And in this current moment, doesn't it feel like actually we are actively not when I say we, but there's a movement to actively defund and de-resource schools? If that's a reality, how do we enact the kind of change that you two are trying to put forward when there's an active society defunding public schools?
Well, thank you for just mentioning it, because it is happening and that is real. And I like anyone who's listening to acknowledge it.
Okay.
I want to say that, and that is the case right now. There's a push to pull that money out and use it privately and otherwise. But the money has not been the problem over the last 50 years. There's been lots of money pouring in that. In California right now, the community schools movement is funded by the government $4.1 billion to cause this to happen. Money does not cause change. It's necessary, but not sufficient. It's culture that causes it. And we've been throwing this money after the wrong solutions to tighten the hierarchy with testing, et cetera. That's where the money's gone. In a futile way to change it, because the strategy doesn't work. So now, naturally, people are pulling back. By our article, we want to reverse that, but this time, let's do it right. Let's change the culture.
Well, and doing that then, too, there's to me, it sets in this motion of going, of course I want to fund that. Is that kind of the tactic you're saying right there, Joanna? You're like, oh my God, Tim, of course.
Well, or again, on the ground as a union leader and negotiator, I'm like, it saves you money. When students are engaged, they're enrolling in your schools. When teachers are engaged, you're not paying the cost of turnover.
Whoa, wait, retaining teachers as a solution to the teacher exodus? Joanna, I swear you.
So the very simplest level, I'm like, I think, and I know years ago when we created our model, it was actually less money than the traditional system because of the way that roles and services were integrated.
Well, I wonder if this is what you're saying, this example here is that it doesn't cost any money to give teachers and communities agency. Is that too simple?
Yeah, I think it's too simple because if you give them agency and they don't have the culture, it won't actually work.
Okay.
So the money is always necessary, but not sufficient. And throwing money at a problem has never worked. It's got to be how the money is used, how it makes people feel, how they want to have a hope, how they want to put additional energy into it, how they start getting results. All of those things have to happen for that expenditure to be credible in the minds of the public.
Johnny Lupinacci, what are your thoughts there on funding?
I was trying to be like a producer and look up a quote while we were doing this because I'm not able, this quote popped into my mind and I'm not able to cite the direct source, but I work with a gentleman, David Garcia, and he always reminds us in our meetings that are very similar about this, how to involve school change and really think holistically about community and the ways that we lead in service of community and partnership. And he always reminds us that, commitment without currency is counterfeit. And I think that that's really true. Like, we do need the money because you can't cut the funds and then say, well, we need you to do something different. You know that there's something different you need to do, but you're not able to get it done. So we need the monetary support. But I also really think when we come back to it, like, the way that we involve, and both, you know, Michael and Joanna remind us of this in their piece and then here tonight, the way that we involve not only teachers, but teachers and their students in the solutions, in the possibilities, in the change. And then I'm by nature of the research and work I do, I mean, I'll throw around the A word, you know, like I'm highly influenced by anarchist philosophies. So I love when we're critiquing hierarchy, but we do need different roles in schools. Like I've been privileged enough to teach in schools where there were no principals, and we, you know, we all thought we could do it, and we need really good leaders in roles that are non-authoritarian, but are organized and do different things. And so one of the things that really brings up, and I'll end this show later with a story from a classroom today from some young people, and they sum it up. But not only do we have to involve them in the solutions, but the people who are in power, we'll say the hierarchical positions, the roles, have to own some of those problems with humility. They have to say, like, okay, so now we're really going to do some things different. So we're not just going to listen to why it's boring or why it's not engaging or why we're not happy in the learning spaces that we're in, why it's not working for teachers, and then say we'll do some change and do nothing. We have to own it that we've been doing this in a really abusive way for too long. And so it's gonna need to change. And that's a big piece. I think we involve and hear it, but don't always take ownership and responsibility for those actions.
Michael.
Yeah, I do. I want to be a little more anarchistic about that. That's the word about that issue, yeah. Because I think it's with the people at the top, we've said now recently, we're going to leave them out as much as possible. We're going to intrigue them with the good work. They don't know what the good work is. They've been funding the wrong work for ages, and they're never going to change their mind because they're in a different part of the issue. So I want, and California is a good example. The top doesn't run it, but they've invested in it. And it's up to the bottom and the middle to show what can be done by working differently. And then I think we'll get the attention of the top and the respect that you're talking about. But you can't do it the other way. You can't say, we're going to get the respect and then we'll be all right. That will never happen.
Yep.
Here.
But it's Busted Pencils, Joanna Rosado, Michael Fullen. The piece is in Education Week, Teacher Power. Michael, and we've got like 30 seconds. Where should people find you on the web?
I'm michaelfullen.ca.
Okay, Michael Fullen. And Joanna wrote, and I just want to say, we worked this out. Everybody who's loving this conversation, we're going to have the YouTube back for an extended podcast, right?
Absolutely.
This is we just started touching these topics. This is what we do every week here. Educated Educators Talking Education. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded. Dr. Michael Fullen, Joanna Rosado, thank you for busting pencils.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
More when we get back.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces.
just by giving her a bear hug.
She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Since the moment you were born, I've made 1,000 wishes. Wishes for your future, in a world that's changing fast. For all of the things you may one day do play, and laugh. Do win and lose. Do learn from your mistakes. And challenge yourself to grow. Do not be afraid. Or make decisions based in fear. Do it all with confidence and with kindness and strength. Do call your mom and ask her for advice. And always do your best to remember that no matter what you do in this life,
thank you.
What matters to me is that you keep doing. I love you always, Mom. Inspire kids to do at 4-H.org.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
What do you think about, I'm going to use that.
I mean,
somebody who says, okay, you guys, look, it's arithmetic, it's literacy, it's not the end of the world. Can you stop it? You know, I mean
yeah. Well, like, how do you answer
that? I can hear, you know, again, my neighbor going, really, guys? The fate of the world rests on teacher power and collaboration and a culture change and aren't we just talking about, you know, telling kids to, you know, get a little bit more motivated, do a little bit like the fate of the world. Come on, you guys, you're way out there.
I mean, it is, it's pretty extreme. It's a pretty extreme language, but if we boil it down, it's real. And I'm not a big fan of using that extreme language because it sort of hyperbolizes stuff that's actually not hyperbolic.
Right.
It's actually very real. Young people feel as though the future is incredibly uncertain, and they're not wrong. Okay. And so I don't want to make it sound, it sounds dramatic when we're like, the fate of the world depends on this, because for so long that has been dismissed as sort of like hyperbole or like extreme thinking. But it is the reality. It is the weight that young people carry within them. Joanna today shared that she's in schools every day hearing the noises that are not representative of happiness, of children learning together and experiencing that in a joyful way. And like all moments in school ought not to be pure joy, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's difficult, there's hard work, there's sad times. You know, we're not looking for some sort of romanticized utopia out of this. But the reality is the future is uncertain, and young people are not oblivious to this. That adds a weight onto what is the purpose of having schools, of being in schools? What are we here learning and doing? Are we here in engaged, creative ways that bring complement to our life? Or are we here in ways to just experience more of being controlled and being asked to be compliant toward things that don't really. And I like that, you know, Michael shared this. He said there was a concept of these wounded winners.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Even when you're good at playing school, the outcome is sort of well known. You get to get into a good college, maybe. You get to, you know, work in a particular career that might not continue to be relevant or exist. And so we have to make school more relevant and meaningful. And young people are really calling for that in both their behavior and their words. I mean, they couldn't be more explicit about that other than to light themselves on fire like Buddhist monks.
Well,
I mean, and legitimately they are. I mean,
they are.
Rates are through the roof.
I'm just thinking about this. So, you know, we've... Producer Anya,
mm-hmm.
Come on, got to bring you in.
Resident voice of the youth.
Resident voice of the youth.
Hi.
Okay, what did you think of Dr. Fullen and Joanna and everything here? What is the house on fire, according to the youth?
Oh my, not only the house is on fire so much that as soon as you said that, an image comes to mind. If you've seen the little dog sitting in the room with the whole room on fire and he's sitting there just sipping his coffee saying, "This is fine." That's how we all feel. The house is on fire. The doors are locked. I'm finishing my coffee. Like that's kind of this house on fire vibe. Yes, that the future is uncertain, that schools are uncertain, that the future, God, for kids who are in school, I'm out of, you know, formal school and college. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, what is down the road for the kids who are still in proper education right now, unlike me? It's crazy.
So let me ask you this then. What about the premise of saying, but what if school actually was about solving the problem of the burning of the house on fire?
Yeah.
Is it that simple?
It is.
Wow.
I hate to sound so crass, but sometimes I hear these things, you know, it's similar when I was in education. We had a fantastic program and I'm really glad we did it. But it was about social emotional learning. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to get a lot out of this. And when I did it, it was just kind of like telling boomer teachers, like, hey, please be nice to your students. They have feelings and they don't want to die.
Boom. Oh, my gosh.
And I'm sitting there like, best summation of doing that. Like, tell me more. And they're like, no, that's it. That's the whole thesis. And I'm like, oh, no.
Johnny.
I mean, I couldn't appreciate. Thank you, Anya, for the youth report. But for that. That sobering dose of reality. That is exactly how I feel when we're discussing a lot of those things too. And it's great to hear from your experience as well. It is that simple to me, Tim, is we talked about involving youth, but I just can't emphasize it enough. We've been for a long time collaborating with young people, with young learners, and involving them in the solution. What we have to do is not ask them to participate in the brainstorming of rewriting the future and then ignore all of the wise things they share and do the same shit over and over again.
Hey, it happens.
Yeah. So. All right. So doing the same business over and over again. And it really, I don't know what to say. It grinds my gears. That's a boomer saying that I'll add into there. You know, it gets me overly protective of their energy, of their contribution to solutions, because we are several generations into radical young people saying we can be a very different world. We can have a very different community. And it is just continually squashed out time and time again. So I'm just inspired that it still exists. You know, the fire of resistance exists in youth that Joanna and Michael point towards. Teachers that collaborate with young energy like their students are teaching us how to be different in schools.
Oh, there it is. Busted pencils. Fully leaded. Check out the extended pod when we get back next time. See you next week, Busted Pencils.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM, and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com. I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Kevin McCarthy is ousted as House Speaker and says he won't run for the position again.
I leave the speakership with a sense of pride, accomplishment, and yes, optimism. From the day I entered politics, my mission has always been to make tomorrow better than today. I fought for what I believe in, and I believe in this country of America.
CBS's Scott McFarlane.
For the first time in its history, the U.S. House stripped its Speaker of his job.
The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Kevin McCarthy's rocky leadership of one of the most narrow majorities ever in the House of Representatives, which he earned only after a marathon.